SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good post-Thanksgiving holiday Monday, race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports on 964 if you're listening to Sirius XM online, and at our website, stevebick.com. Happy to be back and looking forward to a thorough and multi-day weekend recap from what was a pretty amazing, let's call it right out, a pretty amazing several days. The end of the meets at Del Mar and Churchill, the end of careers, really in three international racing venues, the U.S., Canada, and Japan, if you missed Contrail. And that send-off. But it was Max Field, of course, in the Clark on Friday, ending his career on a high note. Brendan Walsh getting on a plane at this hour. He was out west for Zafel in the Matriarch yesterday. So we'll talk to Brendan tomorrow about Max Field. And you could tell how special that was. The first order of business, though, today, in terms of recapping and celebrating a winning note to end a career, Bob Tiller will join us in about 20 minutes to talk about Pink Lloyd. And I don't know. I just was watching and betting and enjoying Saturday, and I actually surprised myself at how, taken I was as it was happening. You know, you're especially because you're going around from Aqueduct to Churchill and et cetera. There are stakes at Laurel, and so you're watching a million things at once. But then you see Woodbine. What was it? The Woodbine ninth or tenth, the Kennedy Road, and you realize, ooh, I gotta watch Pink Lloyd's last career start. And much like Max Field, moving and prevailing, you got the exact same scenario. Pink Lloyd just, I'm not going to say willed himself, but the nine-year-old, steady, progressive advance, wins and leaves the stage. Drops the mic. They all did. Max Field, Pink Lloyd, and Contrail. Those were the three. The Japan Cup winner, wasn't as engaged with that, but it fit the storyline, obviously, from the weekend. So that, to me, along with another theme, which we'll hit on today, with some guests, and that is first graded stake success. You may not have connected all these, all the dots really, as it again, because there was just so much that went on over the weekend. 18, I think I counted 18 graded stakes, and then there was all the listed stakes, and then there's just the other good racing. So there's a lot to keep track of. The carryover Friday at Aqueduct, the force outs of the pick sixes at Churchill and at Del Mar, engaging, so on. And so, there was so much. But yesterday in the Fall Highway, Michael Catalano Jr. sends out Hopeful Treasure to upset the grade three. It's his first graded stake win as a trainer. He's been around forever, 30 years. And we'll talk to him in the second half today looking forward to it. And he's actually going to lead off probably a couple of visits to pay tribute to Tommy Creel. For those from the racetrack side, the passing over the holiday on Thanksgiving. I'm not sure if it was Wednesday night or if it was Thursday, but Andy Simoff let me know that Tommy Creel had passed, and the longtime racing official in the Mid-Atlantic and most recently at Finger Lakes, and another one of those New England veteran horseman slash industry presence that Tommy Creel was, and cardiac issues and complications. And it certainly kind of hit home. And by the way, I'll say thank you immediately while it's top of mind. Tuesday went great for those that were so nice to write notes and texts and Facebook, etc. That went great. They loved everything that they see, and so that was, it was a relief, to be honest, because I really didn't know what to expect what went on Tuesday. So it made it easier to enjoy Thanksgiving, to say the least. Had lots to be thankful for on that front. And so thank you. Thanks to the Capital Cardiology team as well. So Michael Catalano, right? We're also going to talk to Reeve McGahee. Reeve got his first graded stake win as well. I also came in New York. Bees and Honey in the Comley. Jose Lascano aboard. And Reeve, and I put up the number, 160th career start, the 160th runner that he has sent out, or starter. I mean, there's probably plenty of duplicate runners, but 160th start as a trainer, and it was pretty touching in a lot of ways too, because Claude Ray had won earlier on the card. So the first graded stake win coming for Reeve McGahee, I don't know, 2 hours after Suge had sent out Flower Point in the Forever Together. So the McGahee team, really kind of cool. So we'll talk to Reeve. And I'm hoping that I'll be able to reach Gloria Haley in hour three on the West Coast. And much like Catalano, Gloria Haley has sent out horses for literally 30 years. And she got her first graded stake win with Freeport Joe in the Berkeley 10-1. And you know, she doesn't send out a huge number of horses. She wins, I don't know, 6, 8, 10 races a year, and has done so for decades. And everybody I asked around, Hammer. In fact, Hammer's going to join us just for a quick hit with Oaklawn taking the second day of entries today. And not only are they taking entries, you've also got Turfway taking entries today for opening day Thursday. With Churchill wrapped up, Turfway getting started. Oaklawn, of course, the first card ready for Friday. We'll be there. We'll be broadcasting from, I can't even believe it, from Hot Springs Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And it'll be fun before moving on to Arizona for the symposium. Tomorrow at Los Al, they'll take entries for their opening day Friday card. And the Starlet is on Saturday. I'm going to be sorry to miss the Starlet, but it looks like we're going to go on to Los Al and catch the Futurity. So, and thanks to Jay, because I had at first glance, I had thought that they weren't running when I looked at their schedule, I don't know, 2 months ago, it looked like the 4th and the 18th were the days they were running those stakes. And it turned out that it's the 11th. So I think we'll try to get there. All right? So that's the end of the year, beginning of the year, first trip. It's hard to distinguish when you get to this, the post-Thanksgiving. We've been doing this one. We didn't do it last year, obviously, but we're getting ready and looking forward to getting on the road. So let me, Case, give Hammer a quick call. I want to get him in and get a quick report, and we'll check in. I've talked to Hammer since he arrived in Hot Springs late last week, and it's been an interesting experience. So Bob Tiller today, Reeve McGahee, Mig. We'll talk to Rich at the top of hour two, and catch up on everything else in New York, and Michael Catalano, and more. While we wait for Hammer, a couple of the other, you know, big headlines, I thought, obviously, from the weekend, in addition to just the, you know, the stakes themselves and the betting opportunities. How do you not make Kent DeSormo one of the top stories coming out of the Del Mar meet? Kent with just tremendous momentum that was building and really just came to a head over the closing days of Del Mar. Jay Pribman put up the numbers. They were astounding. 10 wins in his last, I think, 17, at one point, 17 mounts, and three graded stake wins, including the grade one Hollywood Derby, where he put a ride on Beyond Brilliant for John Sheriffs that was Beyond Brilliant, and then followed it up with, or had actually, you know, had previously rallied with Say the Word, the Samson Agave, Phil D'Amato charge. They won the Hollywood Turf Cup. DeSormo's riding just incredible. Just and bringing home prices all over the place, including, how about the, we'll get to this, the Miller, the maiden winner that was moving to the turf and stretching out. That was a killer. That was actually the key for everybody to the pick six yesterday on the force out. We'll talk about the betting and all the different opportunities, but quickly, a trip out to Hot Springs to check in with Hammer. Hammer.
Good morning. Can you tell me what day it is, please?
It's November 29th.
Very good. Monday, November 29th. Good to have you back. Good that we're all back. I think we all need a little week vacation, a little to recover from the year. But we wake up this morning and we're in Hot Springs, Arkansas, and believe it or not, it's November and we've already drawn one day. So it's kind of odd to get that in your head, that drawing races for Oaklawn Park in November. But we start on Friday, December 3rd. And you'll be in attendance, but the first day went pretty darn good, and horses are filtering into the backside here, and we're going to be ready to roll.
Outstanding. What's the town? I mean, in terms of anticipation, I see a lot of people talking about making the trip for opening weekend.
Yeah, you know, I got to tell you, I didn't believe it when they told me about the weather here, because, you know, everyone questioned, you know, December, what's going on? Isn't it going to be bad? And they said, no, the weather's fine, the weather's fine. And I'll tell you what, the weather's been pretty darn good. You know, chilly in the mornings, which is fine, but, you know, I was out on a hike yesterday. When you're here, it's going to be 70 degrees. Wow. On Thursday or Friday, and it's been nice, you know. I've heard a lot of chatter around town. The town's a little bit more active than it is even in you know, January, of course, when we were here. So some of that has to do with the holidays. But, you know, I've just heard a lot of comments about people making the run down here for opening weekend. So we'll see how that goes. And as we'll talk later in the week when you get here, it'll be a chance to show off the properties, which are all finished, meaning the hotel and the event center, and of course the casino is expanded, and so it's just a chance to show that off earlier and longer for the season.
What physically, it's just got to look so different. I actually have not sought out any pictures, but I think the architect, rendering of what it was going to look like. It's got to be a very different, like horizon looking out from the building.
Well, I'll tell you, the skeleton or the structure of the hotel and the outside of the hotel was finished last year. The problem was getting all the furniture, across the ocean to get to, to be able to fill the rooms up. So there was a couple floors open last year. So we've seen, the structure there for a while. Just all the lights haven't been on, there was a table, but there wasn't any chairs. So now everything's ready to roll. It's open. It's full. I mean, it just looks. They've done a great job with the architecture. Kind of just fits all right in. And they have an event center here, which when you're here on Wednesday, we're going to go on a tour of the whole facility, so we can really take it all in. But it's kind of cool. You'd go into that first turn, you'd see that hotel, just as Oakmont right on the top there, and a lot of requests for rooms. Obviously, looking trackside for sure.
Well, Amber, I wanted to check in, and the opening day card ready for people to look at, the advent, the first stake, and I think you got the mistletoe on Saturday that they'll draw. So, and then once you get this first weekend in, it looks like a Saturday, Monday, Tuesday schedule for the next little while, for the 3-day weeks.
For the draw, correct. So let's remind everyone, we're on a 3-day week, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, throughout the entire meet. Just because of the limited days you can run per year and all that, hope maybe that'll get changed in the future. But we're Friday, Saturday, Sunday. A little 10-day break from the 19th to, I think, the 31st, if that's right, for Christmas, which is good. And then we'll come back in January. And if the weather doesn't cooperate in January as it has not in the past, maybe move some of those, if we cancel, move some of those dates later in the year. But Friday, Saturday, Sunday, so a lot of weekends here. So you want to make some, if you want to make some plans for coming later in the year, I'd make them now, because a lot of the places I noticed are starting to book up already for the weekend. But, everybody's got a smile on their face here. The track crew does a great job. It has the feel like we're ready to open. And we'll be glad to welcome you here sometime tomorrow and get set up and do a couple shows here Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. So you'll be able to see it yourself.
Looking forward to it. Rick, I got to mention Thanksgiving, kind of a different Thanksgiving for you, right? I reached out and I said, did you find some place to go? And it was a little bit mournful.
I tell you what, as we were talking, it didn't really hit you. What's that Thanksgiving big deal? And then you'd realize, talking to Gina, my wife, I think it's the first time we haven't been together in, 30-some years. We're always somewhere, not necessarily at home. If we're home, we're cooking. If not, we're at friend's house. It didn't hit me till all the friends we used to go to started calling and say, how's your Thanksgiving? And, I was going to go to some friends up in Batesville, and it was raining, Batesville. So I ended up staying here, and it was kind of lonely, to tell you the truth. I said,
yeah,
that's not happening ever again. But anyway, it's good to be here, and looking forward to, a good start to the meet.
Outstanding. And for those that are keeping track at home, Ricardo Santana Jr. named on 3 horses for Steve Asmussen. So for those that I've never seen such carrying on over a jockey trainer situation, although the Baffert Martin Garcia angst was not dissimilar, but Ricardo Santana, 3 mounts for the Asmussen barn on opening day. So looks like things will go forward for those two.
Those things have a way of working themselves out. So yeah. We'll be fine. And we'll delve into a little bit more of some quick starters when you get here on Wednesday. And be looking forward to that. And I hope everyone had a great holiday. And like I said, good having you back. And we're ready to roll.
Absolutely. We will see you late tomorrow night. Rick Hammerly, everybody. Away they go, and away they will go Friday at Oaklawn Park. This new landscape that is going to confront players starting on Friday. And we'll watch. It'll be interesting to see, you know, where betting dollars float and so forth. And, you know, obviously with Turfway taking over in Kentucky from Churchill, and with Lo Sal for a couple of weeks in California before a little break, and then Santa Anita. So there's Fairgrounds up and running, obviously. They're going to get serious at Gulfstream, the Claiming Crown coming up this weekend. So lots to start to transition into the winter season. And they're also winding down in Canada, and we are just thrilled to be able to have Bob Tiller join us in the wake of Pink Lloyd exiting the stage in an absolute perfect manner. Bob, congratulations.
Hey, thank you. Thanks, you guys.
Bob, we've talked, I don't know, three, four, five times over the last three, four seasons, and you know, there's been people thinking at certain point, oh, he's starting to show signs of age, and then he comes roaring back and finishes his career with three straight wins. It just an amazing, amazing career. 37 starts, 29 wins, 26 stake wins, and he never missed a check in his entire career.
Yeah, he's been unbelievable. You know what? If you've seen him this morning, he's bucking and kicking over here. He's feeling so good. And, I was teasing the groom and the riders here today, saying that, we got a race for him in 10 days in New York. But that's not going to happen. I've never seen anything like it. You know, 29 wins, 26 stakes wins, and 2.45 Canadian money, which is where we race, as I've always said. he's just been unbelievable. And we thought it was time to pack it in, and he's going to get a wonderful home. And what do you do for an encore? It's been amazing.
Well. This is one of those horses that there's so many superlatives to throw at him. Obviously, he'll be a Hall of Famer. I was going to make a note and float the suggestion that he's the greatest synthetic surface sprinter in anywhere, as far as I can basically sense.
I wouldn't disagree with you there. He's done it all. He holds the track record here at on this racetrack, 108-1, and he's like I said, he would run from anywhere on the lead, or he loved running at horses, but there wasn't always enough speed in his races, it's been amazing because he recovered from some turbulent times. He was declared an unstarter once. He broke through the gate three times in 217, 218. He even had, I got to say this, way back there, he had a bleeding incident that would stop any horse's career. And we gave him 6-7 months off, and it turned out there was a viral thing that was going on with him. And he come back, and he's won another 8 stakes or 9 stakes since then. So it's just unbelievable. He overcome a lot of things, but now he's sounder than ever, and here we are at the end of the road. We made that decision. So, there's happiness, and there'll be some sadness this week when we put him on the van. We're sure going to miss him. I will miss him, but you can't do this with any horse. I've been around here a long time. I've never seen a horse win that many stakes. It's unheard of.
No, and a certain number of them graded, obviously, obviously opportunities as an Ontario bred to run in restricted company. But frankly, he only not the last couple of years, he pretty much was just beating open company.
Listen, we were beating open company. We were beating some good horses, you know. Horses were coming in from the States, you know, Extravagant Kid. There were some really good horses that came in, and they couldn't beat him. They gave up on him, you know. They couldn't get by him. And, you know, to be truthful with you, most of his races were open races. They were great at races. Yeah, he was, in his earlier on in his career, he was eligible for some Ontario sired races. But he's a, you know, he's a true, true champion. I have tremendous respect. I got a little, both me and the owner got a little few tears the other day in the winner's circle. And I've never done that in all the years that I've trained horses and win a lot of races up here. And he just kind of got to me, you know. It was
sure.
So it's, you know, bittersweet. Bittersweet.
There's a couple of things when I put his complete career up on Twitter the other day. A couple of things stood out to me, and I don't remember if I ever asked you about this, but you weren't tempted to try him on grass. You weren't tempted, you know, to try him a little longer. You kept him between 6 and 7, and you were focused, and you didn't screw around.
No, we managed. We, you know, the races were here at the time. They're not here anymore. They kind of got rid of a lot of the races, so he only run 3 or 4 times this year. Actually, he went running 5 times this year, but there was 8-9 races. It was a great. They were right here at home, and it fitted the program. It fitted his. You know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I've said that many times, and it fitted everything. You know, at the end of the day, this is where we race. This is the races we're here. And, again, without repeating myself, and if it ain't broke, don't fix it. The money was here. You know, he got $112,000 the other day for winning that race. There was no reason to try and... I've seen more horses ruined with people trying to stretch them out to go a distance, and I've seen more horses ruined with horses that wind up going from... running great on a track, on a dirt track or this track here to the turf course. And so I you know, I have a great owner here that we've been together for over almost 35 years, and he's a major shareholder in this horse. And you know, let's just say we've done this before. We've been there before. You live and learn. So this was the right horse to do it with, and it all worked out. You just listen to pressure from other people. The armchair quarterbacks, they're great people, but they only have the result. Why didn't you do this? Why didn't you do that? So we were going to do it our way, and we did it our way, and we got $2.5 million out of it.
And he was a $28,000 yearling.
Yes, yeah, actually... Yes, he was. We bought him over here that year, and he was on our list of horses we liked. And, you know, it's a crapshoot. We bought 4, 5, or 6 that year. I'm not going to lie to you. This game, we gave away 2 of them. And, you know, people got to understand that, you know, and they were as good-looking as he was, or maybe even better. This is the way this business is, and things happen to horses. And we've been blessed to keep this horse sound. In fact, I just got off the racetrack now. One of my horses got loose, and you know what a loose horse can do? He can run through a fence, do anything. So we were lucky and blessed that nothing bad ever happened like that to him, because he was, we figured him out. You know, he was manageable, but we figured him out early in his career.
And I'm just looking. He was gelded. He was actually gelded before he ran, right?
Yes, he did. He was. We do have a policy. We do geld unless there's by super sires out of super mares. We do geld them, and this one turned out, yeah, maybe we shouldn't have gelded them, but we did, and we don't look back at anything like that. That's a decision, another decision that we make. We do geld most of our horses that we feel are not going to be sire potential. This one would have been sire potential, but it didn't turn out that way.
I'm sure I asked you this over the last few years. What was he like to be around?
Oh. Amazing. He walks around the shed row with his head on the ground. He walks to the track with a head on the ground. He stands on the rail like the outrider's pony, looking at horses But mind you, that's the way it is now. Wasn't that early in his career? You know, he was quite rambunctious. But we decided to take him out late and just settled him right down, where he's up to the point where all he does is, you know, he didn't work in between, you know, 3 weeks in between his last race, and he just all he did was do his 2 miles a day, and believe me, the first mile and a half was very, very slow. It's like a jog almost, and then he'd want to pick it up by himself, and he'd get the bucking and kicking and feeling good, and you know, we got to understand this horse, and we really understood how he liked to train, and or at least I think I did. and what he wanted, you know. So, but he's a kind horse. He's a good-feeling, kind horse, not a nasty horse. And his quirks were there when he was young, but they went away with time. So I guess he got a little mellowed out a little when he got older, but he still run like crazy. And he'll never be forgotten for me.
Oh, not now.
Another thing, he win a lot of these stakes two or three times.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And I'd really be disappointed if Woodbine didn't name a race after him very soon, and I'd really be disappointed if he didn't make the Hall of Fame up here real soon, and I think he'll do both.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt that both honors are going to come. We should mention a couple of things, too, about the riders, and...
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously, Eureka Da Silva, a long run with him. Contreras broke his maiden and won the first three, and then Rafi Hernandez mostly the last couple of years.
Yeah. Well, Rafi got on the first time when Eureka was suspended. But you know what? Eureka loved this horse. Eureka did a tremendous job with him. They're all great riders. I mean, you're talking about guys here. They're really, really top riders. Eureka was a great rider. Rafael Hernandez, a very, very, very good rider, very smart rider. And Louis rode him, and, I wasn't happy the last time he rode him, but he's a very good rider, too. So at the end of the day, these guys are top professional riders. And I think the Japanese boy rode him once. This spring he was second, and but you know, riders and races, you can get. He should have probably won two or three of those more races. He definitely should have won two more races where he was just. It was just you know, you get on the highway and there's a traffic jam, you can't get through, and you know, the race that this year where he got beat, he got beat three quarters of length by Super Stonehenge. He was in everybody's pocket that day. It was horrendous.
Yeah.
Absolutely horrendous. So, but that's racing luck, and you see that every day. So I got, like I said, I got no regrets. All good things come to an end, and hopefully all bad things come to an end. That's all I can say.
He's going to go to Long Run as a retirement home. Was there some consideration of keeping him? The reason I asked about his disposition, I think about Kona Gold, who's become became a pony, and so did Lava Man, famously continues on as a pony. Was that a consideration?
Well, you know what? We're going to see how happy he is up there. I mean, I'm going to be truthful with you. I never thought this horse was real happy at any farm. He's always been over at Paul Buttigieg's farm up here every winter. And, I'd come up there and he'd be a little grumpy, you know. So we have to see how he handles himself up there. I have a meeting with Vicky Pappas and her farm manager this morning later on, and we're going to talk about all this. And, we'll keep a close eye on him. If he's happy and he can be turned out and have his daily, get used to his retirement life, that's fine. If not, we can always consider something else, for someone to ride him possibly. And this is all in the works, so we're going to keep a close eye on him. We're not just going to say goodbye, Pink Lloyd, and we'll never see you again. That's not going to happen.
No. And another topic that you and I talked about was the fact that he didn't, I don't think he debuted until what? He was four, right? It was his first, made the races.
He never ran until August of his four-year-old year.
Yeah.
And he's retired in November of his nine-year-old year. So what's that? Yeah, I had him when he was a two-year-old, and it was just nothing but buck shins. We had to cryo his hawk. He had a hawk, you know, curb on his hawk, and you know, he was a bit of a, you know, any little thing would make him lame, you know. And you give I've never seen a horse like this in my lifetime. That you know, he'd feel sorry for himself, and it wasn't made. So he let you know when, oh, I'm not perfect. You know what I mean? I'm not perfect.
Would he not want to train? Would he let you know that way?
No. He always was willing to train. I mean, if he had a problem, we'd know in the stall already before he went out of the stall. I mean, you'd take him one step out of the stall. He always had a little footsie issues, you know. He'd jar up his feet a little bit, and he'd make it into a spectacle. And you give him one shot of beauty, he'd be dead sound the next morning, you know. But he'd make it into a spectacle. He'd tell you, oh, I'm lame. And any other horse, you'd say, oh, my God, let's get the X-ray machine out. But we got to know that after a while, you know. He always had a little narrow heels, and his feet bothered him throughout his career. But, you know, he overcame everything. If you just seen him here this morning, I just seen him a half an hour ago, and then we jogged him, and he's just bucking and kicking and feeling good, dead sound.
That's so great.
That's the story of Pink Lloyd.
Has he had the same groom all this time?
He had the one boy that had him earlier on. He went to work for his dad after his, you know, his three-year-old year. And then the girl, Michelle Gibson, she's had him since he was 3 years old. And
wow.
She loves him to death. She's in here at 4 o'clock in the morning. Spoiling him and the other ones. And, you know, that's another thing that's very important in this business. This is a tough business with long hours, and she loves him to death. And, it's going to be kind of sad, you know.
Sure.
People around the barn are going to be sad. We're going to miss him. And I'll miss him myself. I really will. But, you know, you just can't keep going. It's better off to pull up at the top, you know. If you can get a racehorse to bail out like that, and I didn't think we'd win the other day, and it was just unbelievable that he just wanted to win, you know, that's just amazing to go out that way.
Exactly. And you could see when they came off the turn and, you know, he was easing into contention, and about the eighth pole, I said, he's going to win. It became clear that he was just moving steady.
Well, he's always loved the chase, you know. His best races have been laying third, fourth, fifth, and taking a run at horses. That's been his best races. And he's really, really a horse with a tremendous amount of heart and desire. I can't say more than that. Just tremendous.
And Bob
really,
Tiller,
really amazing.
You've done an amazing job. I mean, just maintaining and you know. Every time, you know, he would get beat, people would say, "Oh, is he losing his step?" He'd keep coming at you.
Yeah, and the part that really I loved is that, you know, people would whisper, "Why don't they retire that horse? Why don't they retire that horse?" Well, guess what? They're all happy, I guess. I've retired him, but I've retired him on the front end.
Yep,
he won his last three starts.
Last three.
He should have won his last four starts, because the day he was second, he, like I said before, he was in everybody's pocket that day. He got checked three times in a race. So he's retired, but he's going out a winner.
Well, Bob, I know it's easy to say, you know, look forward to the next one. It's going to be tough for there to be a next one.
No, I don't. There'll never be another one like him.
No.
Not in my eyes. There'll never be another one like him. You know, horses are fragile, as we all know, and they don't have careers like that. So I've never seen anything like it. And but you know what? We've had a not tremendous amount of interest in him from the United States, and I really appreciate that. People have woke up to this horse. of course, you hear about them, and a lot of love here in Canada, and you know, we've had a lot, we got a lot of love. I got no complaints.
Well, we hope that many more nice ones get off the van, and we'll wait and see if there's another chapter beyond Long Run, and if he settles in to the retirement center, we'll find out and let people know where how they can go visit, because it's become. You know, it's become a big success, like at Old Friends and down at the horse park in Kentucky. They've become tourist attractions. People want to see them.
They do. I mean, he'll be a great attraction up here, and they do a great job. And you know, it's so important, as you guys do in the States, to find the home. To find homes for these horses and a second career, and there's a lot of young people that are very interested. A lot of young girls that really want to have a nice. Retired thoroughbred, so I've placed about six of them this year, and not all necessarily with Long Run, but you know, that's what we try and do. We try and find a home for them, and you know, deeply in my heart, that's what we want to do. And they're not all Pink Lloyds, but they all deserve a home.
Well, this was special. From the name, you know, the name had a cachet, and then he went out and he just earned the admiration and affection of horse players and fans. And Bob, I can't thank you enough, and I can't say congratulations enough.
Well, thank you very much. I think we all need to thank, you know, I need to thank my owners who left me alone all those years, Frank DiGiulio Jr., who I've been with a long time and has tremendous, we have respect for each other, and you know, we talk every day, every couple of days, but he always leaves the last decisions to me, and that's very important as a business.
Sure.
As a trainer, that you have owners that, you know, that respect you. And hey, listen, you got to win races. That's part of the game. And you earn that respect by winning. So, but you know, at the end of the day, I got to thank Pink Lloyd. He's the one I got to thank.
You guys did it together. You brought the talent out.
We were a team. We were a team.
Bob, continued success. Best wishes for the holiday season. Thanks so much.
You too. Everybody stay healthy up there.
Knock on wood.
You take care. Bless you.
You too. We'll talk soon. Bob Tiller, everybody. And Pink Lloyd, just an amazing, amazing story and an amazing career. And we go from, you know, horse that won 26 stakes to a first stake win and a first graded stake win for Reeve McGahee, Bees and Honey, at Aqueduct on Saturday in the Comley at a nice square price. Jose Lascano aboard. And Reeve, congratulations on your first graded stake win.
Thank you. Thanks.
You know, Reeve, when I was handicapping, from a handicapping standpoint, I picked her third, and I thought, you know what? She's moving in the right direction, coming off the nice performance, and seemed like a fit. And the fact that you came to New York with her seemed like a message in itself. Talk about getting her ready for this spot and the confidence to run there.
Yeah, it kind of all came together after she ran at Churchill. I thought she ran behind a pretty nice filly of Brad, and didn't have everything her way that day. Kind of got stuck down inside a little bit longer than she wanted, and she came running and finished up well, and she really seemed to come out of the race in good shape, and we've been wanting to run her two turns and just hadn't gotten a chance to, and this race presented a pretty good opportunity against straight three-year-old fillies going a mile and eighth, and on a racetrack we thought maybe she'd like, and it didn't look like it was coming up the toughest. It maybe looked like a good chance to take a chance, and that's what we did. Trained well going into it, so she gave us every reason to try it.
And then rewarded the confidence and the enthusiasm. Jose Lascano takes the call, and you know, you certainly weren't, you know, seeing a a particularly fast pace. I mean, in terms of kind of stalking, you know, kind of a stalk and go trip. You know, talk about how you expected things to unfold and any instructions to Jose.
No real instructions. The only real instruction was, if you can, keep her to the outside, and the post allowed us to do that because she's kind of a big stride and filly, and if she gets stopped, it kind of takes a little while to get going again. So if she can just kind of get into a rhythm, then that's when she's at her best. So we thought maybe there'd be a little more pace. Thought maybe if Crazy Beautiful broke a little better, she might put a little pressure on the other filly. But our filly, she broke running, and she put himself in a good position, and he did the rest. So.
Well, it ended up, you know, not just winning, but actually won easy in the final analysis.
Yeah, no, I mean, we were confident that she's going to run well. Usually when you run one that's 13-1, you're never going over the saying she's going to win. But we did think she's going to run well. But she still surprised a little bit the way she won, and gave us a lot of confidence heading into next year.
Let's talk about the way the season developed and her development in general. For starters, it's a Gainsway bred, and Andrew Rosen involved as well as a co-breeder and co-owner. It seemed like it took her some time to kind of, you know, even make the races, right? I mean, she debuts in the summer of her three-year-old year. Talk about the evolution and the development, getting her ready, and you know, obviously she's come forward since that maiden win at Keeneland.
Yeah, she came to me in the spring from Blackwood, and she came in good shape. And she's just kind of a big, I don't want to say gangly, but she's big filly, and it just took her a little while to kind of put everything together. Mentally too. One week you'd work her and she'd work really well, and then the next week you'd work her and you'd be thinking, what are we going to do here? And then we ran her, and I thought she ran really well. She first time out going three quarters. She obviously got out sprint a little bit, but she finished up really well that day and galloped out strong. And we took her back down there and ran a mile at Ellis, and she ran fine that day. She was a little bit just kind of, and Declan, he's probably helped a lot here because he said she just kind of wasn't quite focused all the way through the race. She was down inside of horses, and so just kind of have to keep her where she was, and she didn't really seem, she just wasn't carrying them around the racetrack the way you would hope second time out, stretching out. But when you said, when I got her to the outside, then all of a sudden she took off running again. So we got her back and decided, piddled around putting blinkers on her, and we did, and she seemed to work well in them, and the race here at Keeneland, just kind of everything kind of fell together well there. It was a good race to get her some confidence and kind of really just kind of teach her how to put a whole race together. And she did that day, and then she took another step forward at Churchill, and obviously she took another step forward the other day at Aqueduct.
Yeah, you know, we should mention that in that maiden breaker, you dipped her in for 75.
Yeah, we were a little bit aggressive with her, but during the summer the plan was she's kind of in the sale, and we just kind of were a little bit disappointed the way she ran in her second race. Numbers wise, races weren't coming back that fast, and the horses she was running against weren't coming back and running that great. So we said, well, let's try this, and hopefully she'll win and get some confidence from it, and she either she'll take a step forward, or that's just what she is. And she really seemed to bounce forward out of the race. It seemed to do a lot for her. So it worked out for the best.
Well, I can tell you that I won't necessarily take full credit for being the person who identified Claude Ray's 7/8 plans, but several years ago we noticed that when it came to maiden wins, when Shug sent them out at 7/8, it was a signal that it was a horse that wasn't going to be fast enough to win going shorter, and long term is most likely a you know, a route goer. So that 7/8 win, that's right out of the McGahee playbook.
Yeah, no, it is. It takes a certain kind of horse to win going 7/8,
yep.
And she's kind of it's not that she doesn't have speed. Her just first few jumps out of the gate aren't very fast. And I think just because she's as big as she is, it takes a little while to get going. But once she gets her legs underneath of her, then she's quick enough early. And when it helps that she was running against cheaper horses that day. But even that day when she broke, after about her fourth or fifth stride, she put herself right up in the race, and she was just sitting right on top of those fillies. And so she's got enough speed, especially when she goes two turns, to be kind of placed wherever you want her to be. So I think that'll be a nice thing to have once we keep going two turns next year.
The way you're referencing, next year, it feels like she'll get 60, 75 days here to kind of freshen up?
Yeah, we'll probably freshen her up a little bit. She's been pretty active since July, so she just got back to Keeneland this morning, and she looks like she got back in good shape, and everything looks good on her. So I think we'll give her just a little bit of break, not too long, but enough to drop her head down for a little bit and hopefully have a fresh filly for spring and the summer next year.
This is to focus for a second before I turn to you and your career, this is a big win because this wickedly smart sister of the grade one winner, the Alcibiades winner from a few years back, Wickedly Perfect. And so getting graded black type on Bees and Honey goes a long way for Andrew Rosen and Anthony Beck. They got to be thrilled.
Yeah, no, everybody's excited. It does a lot for her, does a lot for the family. So it always helps to have an active grade stakes winner in the family. And hopefully she's got more ahead of her.
Well, plenty ahead for you, too. Let's talk a little bit about what it means to you. And, of course, Shug won earlier in the day. I thought that was a cool sidebar, wins the Forever Together. Talk about winning your first graded stake and what you've been thinking about the last couple of days.
Yeah, it was an exciting day. It's kind of funny. A couple of his big days and my days have kind of fallen on the same day. There have been a couple times he won a couple races, and I won a race at Ellis or something along those lines, or he won a couple races at Gulfstream, and I won one at Turfway. So, it was nice for them to start off the day well, and then Anthony, his assistant up there, was helping us out running her. So, yeah, for the barn to be 3-for-3 on the day was exciting. And, it means a lot to win a race like that, second year training, and win a race 1 1/8 on the dirt, aren't easy races to win, and win a race in New York against the best horses and best competition. It's exciting, and hopefully something we can build on.
Well, on that topic, I mean, talk about where things are in terms of headcount and the client base and this was, I think I put up on Twitter, 160th runner or starter of the career, and that feels like. It feels like it's kind of right on time in the development curve of a young trainer.
Yeah, no, I think it all played out pretty well. I mean, it's been a good year. It wasn't as good as I would hoped it to be, but can't complain too much. I guess barn-wise, it's more than doubled our earnings from the first year and all that stuff. So hopefully it's something we can keep building on. We've got good clients and nice young horses, and hopefully they'll stay together and we can keep developing them, and a couple will turn out to be like her.
You didn't pick the greatest year in history to start your career last year. It's kind of an awkward calendar last year to start taking horses out in your own name.
Probably it didn't end up working out the best way, but it all worked out for the best now, and hopefully we'll get a little momentum going and keep it going.
Well, a couple of momentum builders. Tell us about some of the young horses. How many two-year-olds left that we haven't seen yet?
I've got two. I have a nice filly for Claiborne that I haven't run yet that I've always liked. She acts like she's quick. I don't think she'll want to run too far, but she is quick for three quarters at least. And she had just had some knee stuff early on, and we gave her a little break, and since she's come back, she's been good, and she's hopefully supposed to run on the 9th of December at Turfway, and then I've got a two-year-old that I like down at Tampa now that he ran once here at Keeneland and was fourth, kind of last early, came running late and finished up well. He's a half-brother that's, of course, cellist of Rusty Arnold. And, he acts like he's got some quality about him, and he's supposed to run on Saturday at Tampa. And there's a three-year-old filly that hasn't run yet that's supposed to run on Friday at Tampa that she's trained well, and we've always liked her, another one of Mr. Rosen's. And we've got a horse I really like for Mr. Allen. It's a Warfront. He's actually a full brother to Civil Union. He ran at Keeneland. He was second first time out. So he's one we're looking forward to. He's supposed to run in the middle of December down at Tampa.
All right, let's get some names. I think the one you mentioned that finished fourth at Keeneland, that's Under One Sky, right?
No, that's a horse. His name's Watch the Music.
Oh, okay. Hold it.
The three-year-old filly, Mr. Rosen's filly named Wheezy Does It. She's a Nyquist filly. And then the Battle of Britain was the horse that was second, first time out at Keeneland. And the filly of Claiborne, her name is Traverse.
Traverse. Well, it's got the Claiborne one word name going for it.
Yeah,
that right. That's that's one right. I love it. Well, Reeve, talk. Obviously, you grow up around the game, but remind everybody. We talked about it when you got your first win, but remind everybody the path that you've taken to get here.
I started up in high school. Just kind of my first kind of great job on the racetrack full time was with Owen Hardy when he was leaving horses in Kentucky. So then I worked for him for a few years, kind of summers and off and on, winters and springs. And then I came and I worked for my uncle, Charlie Lopresti. And that was for about 5 years. And then I went and worked for my dad after that for another 5 years or so.
Not a bad resume, and of course you were. Plenty of people saw you, during the prime for Charlie and that parade. And gosh, what a great few years that was.
Yeah, that was fun. I mean, obviously Wise Dan was the highlight, then Successful Dan and Turlore and a couple other nice ones too. But yeah, getting to spend a few years with a horse like Wise Dan was pretty special.
Exactly, and the outstanding resume this win goes a long way to kind of finish the year on an upswing, but it sounds like the ones you've got coming forward, we'll be watching for Tampa and for Turfway, and I'll tell you, it should be a terrific meet at Turfway. I'm looking forward to seeing how those cards start to come together. In fact, they draw today for the opener on Thursday. How many are you going to leave in each spot?
I think I'll probably have about 15 at Tampa and probably leave around 10 around Turfway. I've got one few to run here the first few days at Turfway, and we'll see how they run and kind of go from there as to which direction they go. But there's a couple horses we're looking forward to.
Should be it seems like you're well poised. Reeve McGahee, everybody, and you can follow Reeve, J. Reeve McGahee, on Twitter, and many, many more to come. Reeve, thanks so much. Congratulations.
All right, thank you.
Reeve McGahee and his first graded stake win, and got a lot to look forward to, obviously. We got a lot to look forward to as well. Rich Migliori is going to join us when we come back. Top of the hour break here. Hour two, Mig, and then Michael Catalano Jr. First graded stake win in his career yesterday in the Fall Highway. Reeve's been sending horses out for about a year now. In his name, year plus, and Michael, 30 years, 28, I think, something like that. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, that was one of the big themes of the weekend, because Gloria Haley, three decades in the game. She got her first graded stake win Saturday at Golden Gate in the Berkeley as well. Let's take a break. Come right back. Rich Migliori, the New York Racing Association. Talk to Mig about the holiday and the weekend. He had to work, I know, on Thursday, and I think he stayed downstate, if I'm not mistaken. So he had maybe a delayed Thanksgiving. It's tough to keep track. Everybody, they were doing the America's Day at the Races was doing. Well, they did the Churchill with some Tampa, and then Churchill on Thanksgiving, right? I kind of lost track, to be honest. There was a lot of racing, to be honest. There's going to be we got a carryover actually from yesterday when we talk about that Catalano winner, Hopeful Treasure, with Nicole Sanchez. Nice ride. Made the right move, got the lead, and then was able to hold the Jerkins late runner safe. Back after this, Rich Biglio rejoins us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
A great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horseville.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com.